podcast of thefilmstage.com. As always, I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan, and I'm joined by Danny King, a writer for The Film Stage.
Hey.
And Nick Newman, associate editor for The Film Stage.
Hello.
For anyone just joining us, this is how we work. We'll begin with a discussion topic, probably about 10 minutes with that, related to recent movie news or just movie events. And then we'll move into our primary discussion, which today will be Joss Whedon's The Avengers, which hit the cinemas this weekend and apparently has taken in a very large chunk of change. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll move into spoilers, and then we'll give you our picks for the week ahead. But to begin at the beginning, we should start with our top three movie choices for this summer. So we're each going to go through and give you at home the top movies that we're looking forward to these summer months. I guess we'll start off with Danny. So why don't you run us through your list, give us a little bit of an idea of why you're looking forward to these, and we'll see if we agree about anything.
Okay. My number three is Lawless. The main attraction mostly being the cast, but I think it's a really good match of material and filmmaker too, because of John Hillcoat's The Proposition. I'm also, you know, the early anticipations of Lawless have all kind of talked about The Proposition. I'm also actually a really big fan of The Road too. I just think it's a very evocative kind of tone piece, but there's no doubt that The Proposition and Lawless seem to have a lot of overlap. And this is a trailer I saw again on the big screen before I saw The Avengers, and it just looks like a very kind of energetic, spot-on kind of period piece. And I think Guy Pearce being this hammy cannot not be awesome in terms of what I'm seeing from him. So I just think that cast, filmmaker, everything looks to be aligned nicely here.
Yeah, no, I have that as one of mine as well, and I can say that Guy Pearce is definitely one of my highlights. So, Nick, what about your number three?
My number three is Paranorman, which is the new animated film from Laika, who did Coraline back in 2009. And not a lot of people have been talking about this movie. I think, you know, it comes out August 17th, so we're still a little bit out from it, a little over 3 months. But I think that the first two trailers have been really evocative in terms of kind of creating a unique mood for a family animated film. You don't often see one that's about the undead or monsters or things like that, unless it's directed by Tim Burton, but that means it's probably going to be bad. This stands out because it's kind of hard to put into words if you haven't actually seen it in motion, but I think that it's going to definitely stand out from the typical Pixar DreamWorks slate of things. And it just looks very funny, too.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to that film, even though it did not make my top three list. My number three is actually Moonrise Kingdom by Wes Anderson. And it's kind of based solely just on the fact that I am a huge and unapologetic Wes Anderson fan. I love all of his work. I think The Darjeeling Limited was probably the lowest point that I can point to for him. But, even before I saw anything for this, my anticipation was high. And then after I began to see stills and whatnot, it just continued to grow. And even if it's not the best film, I'm pretty sure that it'll probably ignite a couple of conversations that'll probably stand out as my top of the year. So I'm really looking forward to that. Danny, how about your number two?
My number two would be Prometheus. Again, this is a trailer I saw right before The Avengers. And the sense of intensity and the sense of stakes that you get from the last maybe 4 to 5 seconds of that trailer just kind of gets under your skin, and it gave me goosebumps. And then you have the great Michael Fassbender line pre-title where he just looks like the creepiest thing you've ever seen. And I think I'm just really looking forward to what's going on there.
And Nick, what about yourself?
My second is actually The Bourne Legacy, which is also kind of under the radar at this point. I figure with The Avengers making so much money, maybe Jeremy Renner's presence will catapult it a bit. But, I'm a general fan of the original Bourne trilogy. I definitely think the third was the best. And so I guess we're kind of at a good point with it, even though this is a slight reboot. Well, it's a continuation, but in certain ways it's a reboot. And I really just like Tony Gilroy's style. He has a certain way of writing dialogue and integrating it into the story that I think is beautiful. Even in a movie like Duplicity, which I wasn't entirely head over heels for, I just found it to be kind of a pleasure to watch, any other problems notwithstanding. And so I feel like he'll be able to bring that to a spy movie, which you don't see very often. And I'm also curious to see how they're going to continue this world and how Jason Bourne is in fact the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. I like the idea of rebooting it, but keeping it within the same world, just kind of shifting focus. And luckily, I think Gilroy is the type of person who, as a writer and director, can actually give it the depth that you'd expect it to reach. My number two, however, is Lawless, showing up again on our second list. I think that just goes to show that this is a movie to anticipate. I kind of am looking forward to it for all the same reasons that Danny had. I love Hillcoat as a director. I'm a huge fan of both The Road and The Proposition. And as I believe I said on our Can podcast, I really think that this is the type of material that he can sink his teeth into. The fact that it's being written and scored by Nick Cave, who also helped on The Proposition, is just another kind of feather in the hat of this film.
And Jesse James.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
Great score there.
So at least it will be beautiful to listen to. I was not thrilled by the trailer. The cut of it, I think that the images I saw and the acting I saw were great. The kind of editing of the trailer itself left me.
There are some weird freeze frames that kind of, they're like black and white freeze frames that make no sense why they're there.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. It's one of those trailers that you can tell they probably didn't know what to do with it. So they just kind of cut it like a standard action flick. But I'm fairly certain that it will be able to rise above that. So that's what I'm looking forward to. So now we're on to the cream of the crop, our most anticipated films of this summer. And Danny, what is your number one?
My number one is this really small, kind of low-budget, independent movie called The Dark Knight Rises.
I haven't heard of that. Why don't you tell us what that's about?
It just got a third trailer, which is rare for indie movies. But
it's about a man who grieves over the death of his parents. And,
Speaking of which, I actually watched the Amazing Spider-Man trailer before Avengers, and there are at least maybe five or six lines there where he's just like, what's the truth about my parents? And it's kind of... Anyway.
I sense a drinking game coming up in the future.
I was worried you were going to say, speaking of which, my parents were shot after being mugged last night. But
absolutely.
Okay. Good.
The Dark Knight Rises, yeah. To me, it's just I'm so invested in this universe that has been created by Christopher Nolan. The Dark Knight was a step up from Batman Begins, which was no small feat in its own right. And based on what we've seen with The Dark Knight Rises, he's definitely not, phoning it in for a safe kind of satisfying conclusion. It's definitely going big. And, I'm just hoping for it to be great.
Yeah, I mean, Nick, what's your number one?
My number one is The Dark Knight Rises.
What a surprise.
This was already my most anticipated this summer when the year started, and I knew that wasn't going to change, but I'd already seen the most recent trailer the second it went online, but then I saw it yesterday in front of the Avengers, and it was more thrilling than all 2 hours and 22 minutes of The Avengers, and it had more emotion and better imagery too. I'm on the exact same page as Danny. I love the two previous Batman films. I think they're the perfect examples of what the comic book movie genre, if you can even call it a genre, should strive for. But this is different. Like, I was looking forward to The Avengers, but we'll get to that in a few minutes. I was looking forward to that on the spectacle level. I thought it was going to be, a whiz-bang light show. But this I'm actually looking forward to as a film. I want to see what happens to Bruce Wayne. I want to know, what's going on with Joseph Gordon-Levitt and how will things wrap up? Is Batman going to bite the dust? I don't know. But I'm excited.
Well, it should come as no surprise that my number one is also The Dark Knight Rises. I think we all could have predicted this going in. I, too, saw the trailer and then saw The Avengers. And I have to say that as much as I kind of like The Avengers, which, again, we'll get into, The Dark Knight Rises trailer had a lot more going for it just in about 2 minutes than The Avengers did the entire time. I feel like it's a more genuine kind of story continuation. It definitely gives you this idea, of the Dark Knight trilogy, as they're calling it, as a very continuous and evolving universe that just continues to feed off of all the other pieces. And I do find that I'm interested in the characters as well as the story and just, you know, where they're going to find themselves at the end of this, which is kind of why I wanted to see The Avengers. But I feel as though after having seen The Avengers and seeing the Dark Knight Rises trailer, I can probably look forward to more of a satisfying payoff from the Dark Knight Rises. So,
and at least that's not predicated upon scenes that were put after the credits over 4 years.
Yeah.
I think that helps too. It isn't building off of that, which is good.
No, it's a true narrative, which is, you know, what I was hoping for. So yeah, those are our top three. A little bit of crossover, especially towards the end. I think now we can all agree that The Dark Knight Rises actually gives us a perfect segue into talking about this weekend's juggernaut opening bell for the summer movie season, Marvel's The Avengers, directed by Joss Whedon.
Gentlemen, what are you prepared to do?
No offense, but I don't play well with others.
Big man in a suit of armor. Take that away, what are you?
Genius, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist.
If we can't protect the Earth, you can be damn sure we'll avenge it.
We're in this together now.
All right, that was a clip from the trailer for Marvel's The Avengers, which I believe is what we have to call it, because in literally every piece of promotion, it's Marvel's The Avengers.
And on the title and in the end credits, too.
Yeah, so Marvel's The Avengers, directed by and written by Joss Whedon. This was kind of the 500-pound gorilla in the room. During every discussion about the coming movie season, this is a film that has been led up to by five other films over something like 3 or 4 years. There's been a lot of anticipation behind this, a lot of wonder, because this is the first time that a multi-film franchise spanning genre universe has tried to been created. So I'm sure that there are a lot of people who are wondering just exactly how well we all thought that this film paid off not only its action set pieces, which were pushed heavily, but the idea of creating a shared universe that could be jumped between in a number of films. So since we began our top three picks with Danny, I think we'll start off with Nick this time. Nick, why don't you tell us what your reaction was to Marvel's The Avengers?
I had fun.
All right.
I don't know what else to add. No, I just with the brevity. Well, past the fact that I enjoyed myself for 2 hours and 22 minutes, that includes the end credits, which are a blast, despite some that terrible song they played during the end credits. Did you hear that? Like the sun, we also rise, or...
Yeah, I mean, superhero movies have never had the greatest track record of end credits songs. I was actually thinking about this last night. Like, the Hulk had the Velvet Revolver song, like, Set Me Free. I think Spider-Man, one of them was Nickelback.
Another was Snow Patrol, because it was Spider-Man 3, because it ended so, you know, it ended with them dancing or something, so it had to be moody, and yeah. and it was 2007 as well.
Ah, those halcyon days. So you enjoyed yourself?
Yeah, wow, we got off track. yeah, I did. It was a good time. But what I said to someone later after I saw it was that, you know, I watched it. I had a fun time. I laughed at the last bit of the end credits. I walked out. I went to Barnes & Noble. I tried to find a copy of The Wolf of Wall Street because Scorsese is going to make it into a movie. And then that was it. Like, I just kind of, it was a one step after the other dissipation in my mind. So by the time I got downstairs, I was already thinking about where do I look? Do I look in biography? Do I look in nonfiction? Is it in history? Talking about the book. It's basically what I expected. I was anticipating to be entertained and then, you know, feel like my money was well spent. And I would say so. I mean, it's a well-composed film. I think Whedon is a much more interesting director than even I was anticipating. I love how he kind of, because he's done so much work in the comics medium, he kind of made a moving comic in a way. The way he framed everything was quite interesting. And you have his typical snappy dialogue, which was good. And everybody seemed to be having a good time. They all worked well together, which I was surprised by. I thought that was going to be a huge problem because, you know, you have these five separate, mostly separate movies. is there going to be any chemistry? And it turns out there is. But the problem is that there's just not much else there. There's some nice action, even if it's all CG. And, you know, you've got Harry Dean Stanton as well. I'm honestly like, it's just not a movie I have much to say about, which I hate to say because it made more than $200 million this weekend. So clearly there's a mass appeal here. I'm just a little, yeah, I liked it. What else do you want from me?
I guess we can go on to Danny now and see what you thought of Marvel's The Avengers.
Well, I actually have quite a bit to say because I feel like I disliked it more than anyone. I found it to be a very generic Marvel comic book movie made worse by a couple of facts. The first of which, if you calculate in all the post-credit things, it's about a 2.5-hour movie. And it wasn't the kind of entertainment, for me at least, where I didn't notice, you know, who was sitting next to me, what kind of theater it was like, what my watch was like. It was a very kind of fidgety time. The other thing is that with the ensemble, when you have six characters like that, instead of having one kind of broadish lead that you can just zero in on, there are like six or seven, and so it took really any interest out of it for me.
Yeah, there's virtually no lead character in this
movie. There's really just no kind of, I just kind of sat there and watched the movie and I never felt anything, not even like joyous entertainment, that's what you want to call it.
This is a movie that happened to you.
Yeah.
It doesn't really invite you in. It
doesn't invite you in. You can't engage with it. The one thing I will say though is that maybe about 45 minutes in, I kind of realized that, okay, this is not doing it for me. I'm probably not going to enjoy the rest of this. So what I decided to do is I realized that there was basically no story. It's just kind of like worlds being threatened, assemble Avengers, save world.
Right.
So what I did is I kind of took mental notes of what each scene was doing, just because I was like, in my head, I was like, how the heck is Joss Whedon going to make this a 2.5-hour movie when there's no story? And so a couple of the things that I noted were there are maybe like three or four scenes where the whole point is to just make fun of Captain America being an old man. There are like three or four scenes of Mark Ruffalo making like self-deprecating remarks about his anger. And like there are just all these scenes that happen, but nothing actually happens, if that makes sense. The first scene with Loki and Thor, where they kind of talk in some random location for like 10 minutes, I literally can't remember a single line from the scene, just because nothing happened.
Wow.
I'm gonna leave it at that and let Brian talk for now.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not going to have much better to say. I will say that, you know, for the most part, I was engaged in the action. I laughed at a couple of the lines. I mean, I get it. I understand it. And I mean, I kind of had the same worry coming into this conversation. There's really not a lot to say about this. The movie actually has moments where it could have done something interesting. Without being a spoiler, there's a point where they talk about using every camera in the world to search for someone, which was a scaled up plot point from The Dark Knight. But in The Dark Knight, that was played for the moral ambiguity of the character, and here no one really brought it up.
And it had Morgan Freeman.
Yeah. I mean, and that's just kind of, you know, endemic of the entire problem with this movie, is that it exists to get you to an action set piece that it's going to rest its laurels on, and it doesn't really care about doing much other than that. The other problem is that it was built up by five other movies of extremely variable quality. I think the one I liked most was Captain America, and he's honestly the character that suffers the most by not having, you know, enough to do in this film other than get joked about, and that's about it. I mean, I felt like there should have been more bleed-in from the other worlds. I was just really underwhelmed because I was led to believe that this was going to be sort of like, you know, the Return of the Jedi for all the other films, you know, New Hopes and Empire Strikes Backs. And what this really felt like was more like, you know, a half-hour TV special, kind of a fan service episode where nothing really matters. There didn't seem to be a lot of movement forward. This is like a 2.5-hour long climax to five other films. And unfortunately, that just doesn't work for me. I've had to preface every single comment that I've given to friends by saying, I enjoyed the movie and I'm not telling you not to go see it, but lower your expectations. Yeah, I mean, and unfortunately, the more I talked about it, the more I realized there were a lot of things wrong with it, but those are more plot-based. So in a very general way, I guess you can say it should have been shorter. It's too long of a movie to just say it's fun. I don't know. It's a disappointment for me. I'm sure a lot of other people liked it. $200 million would say that I'm correct in saying that. I just don't know. I don't understand what other people who were so ecstatic about this movie saw in it that I did not.
I didn't have a big problem with the length, though. I remember when I looked at how long it was, I saw it was 2 hours and 20 minutes. I was like, fuck, because I was thinking, you know, oh, okay, yeah. Because, you know, sometimes these movies are like 100 minutes and you actually kind of feel the 100 minutes. You're sort of, you know, tapping your watch or, well, nobody actually does that. But anyway, but you know, I think there's enough character interplay and the last, you know, like 40 minutes are just an action scene. Basically, so I don't think that pacing or length is necessarily an issue for me, at least.
Well, my problem, I guess, was more stagnation. I mean, they get onto this absurd aircraft carrier helicopter thing, and it just kind of sits there, and then they go somewhere else. Again, not wanting to get into spoilers, they go somewhere else, they do something, and then they get back on the helicopter carrier thing, and then they just kind of hang out for a while. This is a movie that the characters kind of coast on this weird inertia, just waiting for something to happen. There's no detective work. There's no figuring things out. Like, they basically wait for the sound of chaos and then race into it, which is not, I guess it makes sense since they're like the Avengers and not the Preventers. Like, their entire name is predicated upon some shit going wrong and then them just kind of giving retribution for it.
Which makes them, that makes them terrible heroes,
yeah,
though. It's like
they're awful heroes.
You know what I was thinking when Tony Stark says, you know, if we can't save this world, you'll be damn sure we avenge it. What do you tell that? Do you tell it to the guy whose family was killed by a race of aliens he didn't know existed until 8 minutes ago? Like, you know, I'm sorry that they're all dead, but we're gonna
kick his butt who did it.
I don't. That's
I
just
know,
an interjection.
Yeah. But I understand what that line was supposed to do.
What? I don't understand what that line was.
They gave it a chance to justify calling it the damn Avengers Initiative. You know, it's like supposed to be the hero line. Like, we're not going to give up. We're going to be the Avengers. But I mean, like, that's such a terrible sentiment. Like, you shouldn't say if we can't save the world. It should always be we're going to defeat you. And it's just weird that he would give that caveat. Like, you don't go into the World Series saying, you know, if we lose, we're going to go and beat the other team in their locker room with our bats. You say, we're going to win, and that's the only way it's going to be. So it was just very strange for me to hear him say that, especially since he's not particularly cynical about his own ability to get things done. So it didn't even seem like a proper character moment. But again, this movie doesn't really give a shit about characters, so it doesn't matter.
I was just going to say, on the subject of proper character moments, to me, a lot of what bugged me in this movie was just kind of like every scene felt like kind of a check mark on each character. Like, Whedon was writing this script just saying, okay, I have to put in, you know, Captain America making a Hitler reference because he's old. I'll check that box. I have to put in a heroic line for Stark because he was snarky before this, but now we have to like him. I'm going to check that box. And it just kind of annoyed me. And one of the things I noticed was that actually a lot of the funniest kind of parts in this movie were by were lines or reactions from Clark Gregg's character,
yes,
if I'm being perfectly honest. And I think one of the reasons for that is Whedon didn't feel any like pressure when he was writing that character, because no one goes into this movie thinking, or no one goes into this movie saying, okay, I want Clark Gregg to do this, I want him to do that. And I feel like, honestly, that kind of freedom or that weight off his shoulders makes a lot of the humor around the Gregg character more kind of organic.
I would agree with that, definitely.
Like, there's this moment early on where Scarlett Johansson, she's kind of beating up a lot of people, and he's just on the other end of the phone, and there's this cut to him, and he's just nodding while he hears her kind of beating these people up. And it's just very, it's like, yeah, that is how it would be. Like, he would just be waiting for her to finish pummeling these people into submission. And it's, like, really, it's funny. And then, you know, he has a line where he talks to Captain America, and he's like, hey, man, I've been watching you sleep for 70 years. And Chris Evans is like, get away from me. Like, you're creepy. And it's like, I just feel like it was a lot more organic and kind of natural humor versus the other characters.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, he was like the only through line for the rest of these films. So it did, it was weird because his character interaction had more impact because he's the only one who I know for certain has actually been in this world and been around. You get this idea that like every one of these characters is living in their own little insular world just because, first of all, in the narratives of the movies themselves, primarily all of the S.H.I.E.L.D. business was kept until the post-credits sequence, which is not a very good method of world building. It's actually pretty abysmal because, first of all, not a lot of people are going to stick around. And they used that fact that only the real hardcore fans were going to stick around to make some of those references, the most oblique and just weird references whatsoever. Like, if you're not familiar with Thor, you're not going to know why the hell it matters that there's a hammer in the desert. I had no idea what the cosmic glowing cube of ultimate power was at the end of Thor. So having him here was really like the only way of me to say, oh, okay, this is actually the movie that I've been promised. Because otherwise it just kind of seems, like I said, sort of like a fan service episode. I mean, I agree a lot about the kind of checklist thing. There's a scene that everyone's just kind of in a room shouting at one another. And I was like, well, I guess this is the obligatory we're not getting along moment.
Yeah, and then there are like pauses at the climax where it'll be 10 minutes of kind of fun killing and then 45 seconds of dramatic music with dramatic looks on each character's faces. Like, this 45 seconds clearly came from a different place, but let's just put it here to, like, insert drama in the thing.
It's like, well, we don't have an actual emotional arc going, but we can fake it. My other problem with this movie before...
We can't have an emotional arc, but you'll be damn sure we'll pretend. I don't know. Just, you get the idea.
My other main problem with this movie, and I'm sure that, you know, a lot of people aren't going to agree with me. Possibly not you two, but a lot of fans out there. This movie has no weight to it whatsoever. Without getting into spoilers, because I think we'll jump into that in the next couple minutes. But just, this movie has all of the physical impact of like playing in a sandbox with some action figures. Like, you know, a person will fly 48 feet back in the air, smashing through 17 trees, and just get up and shake it off. And at the point where you see someone do that, every subsequent hit they take has zero meaning to you. Like, I don't care. When I see the Batman trailer and Batman looks exhausted while he's fighting Bane, that gives me a feeling that this fight will have stakes and meaning, and it will do something to me because I'm in it with that character who I can clearly see is suffering. Whereas in this film, Tony Stark at some point basically gets put through a giant blender and he just comes out and doesn't care. You know, Thor gets mashed up and doesn't care. Captain America, you know, every time that they're about to deliver a blow to him, he just puts his shield up. And because of the asinine qualities of the metal used to make that shield, it doesn't matter to him. And none of the characters who can be hurt ever really are hurt. I guess that's kind of a spoiler. I don't think so, though. I mean, it just doesn't matter to me. Like, when I see these people just wailing on each other and nothing happens, it's like a video game. You know, they have little health packs that just automatically deploy. I don't give a shit.
Or Nick Fury gets shot and then jumps out of a crashing helicopter.
Yeah. Again, like, there's no sense of immediacy or danger, and it's like, well, why the hell should I care? Like, this doesn't mean anything. Was I alone in that?
I feel like I should jump in and say something positive because I did like the movie, but
I did too.
Okay, I just want to say it is nice to. This will sound strange because I always rail about how much movies cost to make now, but it is nice to see a movie that looks expensive once in a while. You know, a lot of people have complained about, Thor, for example. A lot of people said it felt too small scale.
You mean that soundstage in the desert didn't feel like a thriving yeah. Midwestern town to you?
Right. But what I liked here is that, you definitely felt scale because so much of New York City is being destroyed and you're kind of following these giant, massive space worms as they're colliding into everything. Maybe this is because I'm lame, but throughout much of the action, most of the time I was thinking, oh, how much is this going to cost to fix?
Yeah.
I mean, Christ, like, the entire front of Grand Central is obliterated.
I kept thinking about all the loss to, like, historical preservation and architecture. I don't know if that's the right thing I should have been thinking about.
Right.
I have more of an emotional connection to the city than the characters. I think that's a problem.
But no, I mean, it's like what I said before. I went in expecting like a special effects light show, and that's exactly what I got. for the end of it, and that left me happy. But on top of that, I actually really liked the first hour. It was fun watching the actors interact, because I know some people have been excited about, oh, you're going to see Thor and Captain America and Iron Man on screen at the same time. That doesn't mean anything to me whatsoever. Like, I just don't care about, you know, all of them in a room together as characters, but seeing all these people bounce off one another with their different styles was, I just thought that was kind of a joy, to be honest. And it was also a little Zodiac reunion, if you think about it. I think it's, for me, the film is two halves, both which work well, but work in very separate ways. Although, admittedly, I would have liked more of the first hour than the second.
I think I have to disagree with you. A lot of this movie felt really cheap to me. Joss Whedon, God love him as a writer, you know, he's got some snappy dialogue. I enjoyed, and I actually wish there'd been more of Captain America and Thor kind of struggling for, you know, relevant cultural references. There's a moment where someone brings up The Wizard of Oz and Thor doesn't get it, and Chris Evans as Captain America is like, oh, I understand that one. I got that reference. And he seems really happy, like he's finally part of the group. Unfortunately, that was more funny in an academic way than an actual character way. But yeah, Jesus, this movie was not, it felt like it wasn't shot with a wide-angle camera. There was like no sense of composition.
No, it's 185.
Yeah, there's a lot of, it felt like a television movie. There's no...
What TV movies do you watch where this is happening? I gotta dispute that. This isn't like a TV movie at all.
The first hour, at least, like when it opens up into New York, it gets a little bit better. But like everything is very claustrophobic. You're just constantly focused on a face. A lot of the scenes with the dialogue, only one person is in focus, which I guess is okay, except for the fact that it doesn't shift focus when that person isn't talking or doing anything. And it's just a lot of like low angle close-ups on people standing around as stuff is happening around them. And I don't find that particularly visually interesting. That's a very generic choice. And I don't understand on an artistic scale what was trying to be achieved by that.
You know, honestly, one of the reasons it kind of felt large to me, this will sound weird, but the cinematography of the film feels very cinematic. I don't know if anybody else
I disagree.
Gets what I'm saying. It felt like a summer film to me.
It looked like a Transformers film.
No, it did not look like a Transformers film.
It was just all bright colors.
If it looked like a Transformers film, it would look like somebody was pouring sand in front of the camera.
Okay, I guess you have that.
This had like a bright, energetic feel to it. They're on a flying boat or something. Like, I thought that was impressive too. And you've got the glowing cubes and the sticks that turn you into a zombie. It felt big budget to me.
I would echo bright. I'm not sure if I would echo energetic, just because a lot of what I was looking at just felt flat.
Yes.
In a sense, like if I'm thinking about the opening 10 minutes, I was just like, okay, I'm waiting for a moment that will just kind of hit me and bring me into the movie. And it was just like nothing jumps off the screen. There was nothing, in my opinion, and this isn't exactly cinematography I'm talking about now, but there was just nothing particularly inventive really about any of the action. I was talking about the opening 10 minutes. It's like, okay, what's going on here? Oh, Tom Hiddleston just showed up in a magic blue cube, and now he's sticking a sword in people, and Samuel L. Jackson looks worried, and let's cut to the next scene. Like, I don't know, nothing ever just kind of reached out and grabbed me, in a sense.
Yeah, this movie, I definitely agree with that. There's not a moment where I was forced to surrender myself to the film because of the sheer awesomeness of what I was seeing. This movie, like Cabin in the Woods, features a driving through a collapsing tunnel, and the tunnel conveniently stops collapsing right before it kills a tertiary character. I mean, like, just things like that. Like, it doesn't mean anything to me.
The opening scene is I think it's easily the worst scene of the film, which is never good because that's how you're starting things off. But there's no sense of, there's no spatial coherence there. Like, I didn't know who was driving the truck that gets collapsed on, and I didn't know where Kobe Smulders was, and I'm trying to figure out why are Hawkeye and Stellan Skarsgård bad now. Like, there was too much just they were throwing so much at you in this opening scene. It's not that I want to be spoon-fed, but what happened there?
Yeah, it was really not a good opening, just flat out.
And I feel like that also set up what I thought was the worst plotting decision of the film, which is to have Hawkeye and Eric Selvig is his name, Stellan Skarsgård's character. Like, the latter, if you make Skarsgård bad for the most of the film, that makes sense because he's a scientist. But what was the purpose of making Hawkeye a zombie for 45 minutes? I mean, honestly, it just kind of dragged things down a bit.
Well, since we're here now, I think this is a fair time to say we should get into spoilers, right?
All right. Yeah. All right.
I don't know
if I was spoiling anything.
I don't think that the zombification is too much of a spoiler. It's more of a letdown. All right. So anyone listening, spoiler-free thoughts on this, I say it's not a massive disappointment. It's not what I was expecting. It's okay as a summer flick, but as something being led up to by five films, it's kind of underwhelming. But yeah, you can go see it if you want. I'm not going to tell you not to. Danny, you're...
Go see it if you want. I'm done with this. Just go see it.
And Nick?
It's a fun time at the movies. Go see it. Don't see it in 3D. I didn't, but I heard the 3D's bad. And if you do see it, which I think you should, please make sure it's in a theater. Just to kind of, I don't know, I feel like there are certain moments that will work best on a big screen with surround sound. And with clapping fans. I want to say, I can't remember the last movie I saw that had this much applause throughout the film.
Yeah, I didn't get sometimes what they were applauding about. But now that we're in spoilers, I can actually say...
Iron Man in space.
Yeah, I mean, Iron Man in space. The thing is, why was he passing out? Was there a system failure? Because they showed him under the ocean, and I feel like if your suit can stand, you know, being completely submerged at what appears to be a very insane depth, that you could make it out in the vacuum of space. Am I wrong about that? I mean, NASA trains astronauts in actual spacesuits in a tank to simulate weightlessness.
Well, space is a whole different game.
I guess. Something. I don't know. It didn't make a lot of sense to me.
Also, why did they... This is the only time these two movies will be mentioned together. Why did they lift the conclusion of Independence Day?
Oh, my God. Absolutely.
to this film. That was a little strange.
That was strange. I thought the same exact reaction. They lifted both conclusions to Independence Day. There's the pilot, you know, flying into the beam and, you know, straight up into an apparent suicide mission, and then there's the nuking of the mothership. Like, I guess they just said, well, we don't have time to do both of those, so let's just mash them into a single thing. I was shocked. I was also... This goes into talking about how poorly this movie is plotted, I think. Or if not plotted, then at least constructed. I had no idea what was going on with the aliens. The movie opens with a terrifyingly bad monologue. I would put it on par with Green Lantern's opening.
I haven't seen that, so I wouldn't know.
It's just this moment where, like, you're in space, like the most visually uninteresting space ever, and there are just rocks floating, and this disembodied voice that's not even, like, I was expecting, like, a character to be speaking so I could immediately be, like, in the movie, but there's just this voice that's like, the Tesseract has awakened, and blah, and then it just starts talking, and I zoned out because I was like, what the hell am I watching right now? Yeah, I don't know what the hell that was. And Loki's there, and he's, you know, apparently these aliens caught him floating in space like a child abandoned on a raft in the ocean, and they just all kind of like hung out for a while and decided they should work together to get this ultimate cube of power so that Loki can rule the world and the aliens can go off and do some other shit. Like, I'm not even entirely 100% sure where their plan overlap was, and I would love for someone to tell me that.
Well, a big problem is that the Chitauri, as they're called, have no presence in the prior Marvel films.
Exactly.
And they really, I mean, they literally introduce them in the first 30 seconds of the movie.
And then just leave them alone for like...
I don't want some big expository monologue about they came from that planet after there was a famine and, you know, because I don't care. But it's just sort of...
Insert bad guy.
Well, you know, it's clearly just they needed a bad guy to have them fight, which I didn't mind personally. It's not a big quibble I have. But at the same time, you don't get a sense that they're threatening except for the fact that they can blow things up.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of funny. a lot of people have been talking about how aliens are becoming our new stand-in for like any other kind of nationality or ideology when we just need a big action scene. Battle Los Angeles got a lot of flack because it's like, well, it's just a war movie, but it gets to be pro-America without being anti any other country because it's just aliens. Same with Battleship. It's like, well, we can't have them fighting another country, so it's just aliens. No one really seems to care that the Avengers is just aliens. I don't understand why that should be.
And this is basically why I find myself getting so worked up about this movie, is because it has like a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes or something. Like, it's being taken so seriously.
Yeah.
And while I was watching it, I'm just like, I don't understand why. Because it's just not, it's not a serious movie. Like, I don't understand how you could argue otherwise.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, this is one of the problems with the tomato meter. It's either rotten or it's fresh. And I would just say, like, there should be one that this is, like, existential. It just exists.
Yeah.
It's all I can really say about the movie.
Well, I would give this movie a fresh rating, so I think that...
Yeah, see, that's the other thing. But
it's
being taken, I feel like, as a serious movie.
Yeah.
More so than the other Marvel movies, and I don't understand why. Like, I honestly thought Captain America was a better movie than this.
Captain America, I think, is provably a better movie than this.
And that movie, no one's talked about it since it came out. And this movie, it's like, oh, this movie's so epic. It's way better than all the other ones. And it's like, why?
Yeah, this is...
Because it has six characters and the whole city is blown up instead of just one thing. Like, I don't know.
This movie operates on the same assumption that the Oceans movies do, where it's just like, well, if there's more characters, it's more important, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Only this wasn't directed by Steven Soderbergh.
So it doesn't have any style.
Well, that's a little unfair. It has some style.
It
has nice cinematography.
It has flat, candy-colored cinematography. I really do want to work out this whole thing. Because when you have a superhero movie, I know a lot of the time people say that Batman suffers because the villains are inherently more interesting than Batman himself. I can understand wanting to get away from that, but what I can't understand is doing it by just not having a villain. I mean, Loki shows up, wrecks some stuff, steals the cube, and then, like, goes to Germany? Just, like, to steal... I know he has to get, like, again, another plot device metal that can only be found in one place. And then he just kind of hangs out long enough to, you know, try to tell a bunch of Germans that they're happy being subjugated for some, like, extra added subtext.
But I mean, and then, like, Joss Whedon kind of lifted a scene from Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, exactly. I was just like, oh, someone's going to stand up, and someone does stand up. And then,
which was much more powerful in Spider-Man 2.
Precisely. I mean, like, it's the thing about this movie is we could...
Oh, and Superman 2. I don't mean to keep interjecting, but the whole Neil, come on.
Yeah.
Come on. When you think Neil and a supervillain, you think of Terrence Stamp.
And that's the problem, is this movie feels so just... basic and normal. Like, I really was expecting something great from this movie, and I feel as though it let me down. Like, it basically said, what do we have that other movies don't? And instead of going for plot or, you know, timeliness, it said, we have six or seven people hanging out together wrecking stuff. And they're just like, all right, that works, we're done. And the problem is there, you know, I was talking to a friend about this. Like, was there any reason that the aliens seem to be using Loki as a conduit to get the cube and bring it back to them. And as long as he does this for them, they'll help him subjugate Earth as, like, his payment. Which I guess makes sense, except for the fact that they could have just sent one of their own people there and done the exact same thing and not had to deal with this nut job. Can anyone tell me why it was imperative that he do it?
Because Tom Hiddleston's a really good actor.
I actually do like him a lot.
I do.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
I'm not that bothered by that because, you know, he is one of the highest powers on Asgard, and he can
take a pounding from the Hulk and still be conscious.
Yeah. I don't know what to say.
I'm struggling
to explain. Okay. You know, he's got the stick and he can...
Which was given to him by the aliens.
Okay, that's stricken from the record. He can make apparitions of himself because he's mischievous. And
yeah,
the god of mischief, that doesn't sound bad. It sounds like he, you know, puts salt in your coffee instead of sugar. Like, anyway, okay. That's always bothered me. Ooh, he's mischievous.
Yeah, Trickster somehow became, like, raging asshole who just wants to fuck you over. Like,
yeah. When I think Trickster, I just think a slightly annoying guy, not someone who's going to enslave humanity, because he's evil and he has the means to accomplish things. So,
I guess. But yeah, I mean, and then they keep talking about this coming war, this, you know, massive thing that's going to happen that only the Avengers can stop. But you have throughout the course of the movie absolutely no reference point. You know, you don't see these aliens subjugating any other worlds. For the longest time, it's just Loki and one other guy. So you don't even get a sense, and they're standing again on like a stone platform in the middle of the cosmos. You don't get a sense of the scale of these people. You don't even get a sense for what they look like. You don't get anything. So there's nothing to cause me any concern over the fate of the world.
Additionally,
yes,
I mentioned kind of how around the hour mark or so, I started just kind of looking for things that would interest me just on a purely like, oh, how did they think of that level? And there's a shot in the climax where it shows a bunch of aliens and they're all, you know, flying and menacing and they have their lasers or whatever. And then it cuts to Scarlett Johansson kind of kneeling behind a taxi and she gets up really quick with a really small handgun,
right,
and fires two shots and then goes back down into cover. And I was just thinking to myself, what purpose could those two shots have possibly served with thousands of flying aliens with lasers? I was like, how are you surviving? What did those two shots just do? And it was funny because the previous shot with the aliens was very loud. And then the cut to Scarlett Johansson, it kind of quieted down a little bit. And all you heard was two bullets. And it just, like, the comparison was like, you're not a match for these thousands of aliens. Like, I don't get what just happened. And going off that, I don't get how Hawkeye survived. Because every shot of him in the climax was just him standing on top of a building shooting arrows.
Right.
And every time it cut to him, I'm just like, okay, in the time between the last cut of you and this cut, there must have been 200 aliens that flew past you. How are you still standing without a mark on you?
The one thing that I could think of is that the aliens just did not care.
Right, exactly. Like, they were like, all right, you're kind of cool with your arrows. Like, we're going to leave you alone
for now. Man, that woman just killed two guys. Like, you know, Tom and Jerry just fell. And they're like, so freaking what? We got a snake monster with 4 billion other guys on it.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, when you have a man in a metal suit detonating explosives inside a creature, maybe someone with a bow and arrow is, you know.
Yeah, let's triage this situation.
Maybe they did that. They prioritized.
Yeah. It's pretty bad, though, that, like, you have these two characters who you've been kind of building up, and, like, their sole, you know, reason for being able to survive isn't prowess. It's just not worth the time. I don't know. Like, when that first giant snake monster came through, I was kind of like, oh, that's kind of cool. I like it. You know, it's like, that's something big that you'd need more than one guy to take down. Unfortunately, they then subvert that by having two different guys take down these things one at a time each time. So those things stopped becoming any kind of problem. It's kind of like when you play a video game and you're tiny, but there's like a massive godlike creature you have to kill. And the first time you do it, it's kind of a rush. But then when you have to do it for the 20th time, they just become a bigger, you know, time sink. And that's how I felt about a lot of this movie. Still liked it, though. Feel like I need to keep pointing that out.
Yeah, I still enjoy the movie, even after this discussion.
Other main problem is, and this is just kind of addressing other people, everyone keeps saying the Hulk was done right in this movie. Does anyone have any idea what that means?
That confused me a little bit, just because I think Mark Ruffalo is a really fantastic actor, but to me he was just one of the six. Like, I don't think he was given enough to have people walk out of this movie and be like, oh, the Hulk freaking killed it, man. Like, he was awesome.
Yeah.
Like, it was just one of the rest.
He's got some good, you know, solo moments, but his character,
I think he's done right because he's not overdone.
Maybe that's it.
And he also gets the best moment in the film, which is when he's smashing Loki.
The one thing about the smashing that bugged me, because it's amazing, but I was just like, why didn't this happen an hour earlier? And I could have been on my way home
enjoying
a soda or something. Like, I was just like, in that shot, it was almost Joss Whedon just like looking at you and saying, all right, this is just freaking ridiculous. Like, why couldn't that have happened an hour earlier is basically what I'm saying.
And the thing is there, like, you know, some people would probably say because the Hulk didn't want to Hulk out.
Right.
But he totally doesn't have a problem with it. Like, They make it seem like like tactically nuking your own side. Like, you don't want to do it unless you absolutely have to.
But then they ask him at the beginning of the climax, and it's like, oh, I'm always angry.
Yeah, which and doesn't make any sense. Maybe. I'm going only off of the movies because I haven't read any of the comic books. And if there's an excuse for this in the comic books, I don't want to hear it because we're talking about a movie franchise. He gets green and hulky when he's angry. At some point, there's like an explosion on the ship, and apparently that pisses him off. He's not scared. He's just angry, and he tries to kill Black Widow.
And there needed to be more regret about that time he killed Allison Janney with a bus.
Oh man, let's not bring that movie into this conversation. It's not fair.
I mean, my thing is though, like he tries to kill Black Widow, and she honestly seems to have some kind of PTSD following it. And then she just snaps out of it, and then he's like, "Oh, I'm always angry," and then turns into the Hulk and punches a snake dragon troop carrier in the face. And suddenly he's like the world's best teammate, except for the one time he punches Thor, which was played like a total cartoon moment, which again plays into my lack of engagement with this movie through sheer impossibility. Is there like a thing there? Am I missing that?
I don't think so.
I don't
know. But I'm like you, you know, I have no knowledge of what happened in the comics.
It's just I felt like we were being built up to this moment where, and this, you know, to me would have been a much more engaging climax, where they basically tell Bruce, you know, screw it, just do it. Like, we need an unstoppable force to draw some fire, and we'll just try to stay out of your way. And so it could have been like he was a whole third front that everyone had to avoid. But instead, he's just like, you know, you're the kind of dumb, angry guy that you can just say, hey, go over there and punch that. And he does it. Like, I didn't understand. But I guess perhaps I'm not supposed to.
And did anybody really like the moment when he pulls up on the little dirt bike, just as an aside? You know what I'm talking about? When Bruce Banner pulls up on it after, like, everything's been destroyed. And
is that kind of after he's, like, disappeared for a while?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah, that was good.
That was cute. but I guess, yeah, my problem with the Hulk is my problem with the entire movie. It's just uneven, and it doesn't make internal logical sense on its own. And that's a problem for me.
One other thing that I just find funny is that I kind of saw this. I saw this with like five or six people who are all vested, kind of had read the comics, et cetera. And after we got out of it, I said, you know, whatever, like that was whatever. And they were all like, oh, I love that. It was freaking awesome. And after about 30 seconds, we kind of just walked in silence. And it kind of dawned on me, like, even the people that outright love this movie, there's literally nothing interesting or intelligent to say about it. Like, whenever someone would talk, it would just be them pointing out their favorite explosion or whatever. And it's just like, this movie literally leaves you with nothing kind of to say about it.
It's what I was saying before, how, you know, immediately after I was trying to find a book in Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, like, just kind of like forget about it.
It's a movie that it exists strictly in like the hard drive that it's placed on and put on a movie theater screen.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that's it. There are things to talk about afterward, but it seems like in this case, it's criticisms of the film.
Yeah, and I mean, so I talked with one of my friends in depth. We run another podcast, and he was really in favor of this film. He's a huge nerd. He has all the comics. But even he was at a complete loss to really try to fight back against any of the things I was saying, which is not good. Like, when you're depending wholly upon the enthusiasm of a built-in fan base to quell any judgments that you're making that are qualifiably, you know, actual. Like, when you have a problem with it and the person can only say, yeah, that's right, but I still like it anyway, that's not a good thing. And having, you know, critical dissent trying to be squashed in this way is very odd, and it's probably not good for the medium, but
well, I mean, Samuel L. Jackson's leading that charge.
Yeah, I was going to say we could probably have a whole other podcast on Samuel L. Jackson's tweet about A.O. Scott. Yeah, well, we'll see. On that subject, if you are a fan and would like to try to take us to task for this, you can always get in touch with all of us here at The Film Stage Show by emailing us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. We look forward to any and all dissension. We are here because we like to talk about movies, even if you disagree with us. That being said, I think that, you know, last comments and then we can move on from the Avengers discussion, just as we moved on from the Avengers the movie. Any final thoughts on Marvel's The Avengers?
Oh God, I have to keep saying this. I liked the movie. It's entertaining. I I didn't regret going to see it, even though obviously I had to see it because we're reviewing it. Okay, I will say this about I was actually going to wait until school year is over and just go see it then, because I'm not in a rush to see it. But when I found out we were reviewing it, I was like, oh, well, okay, I guess I got to go see it this weekend, which I feel like says a lot about how much I was anticipating this to begin with.
Right.
Like, I was just kind of like, yeah, okay, I'm going to make that trip now. So this it's a movie that I didn't go into with a lot of I was looking forward to it, but I wasn't, you know, like, oh, man, I'm going to see the Avengers. I was like, okay, Joss Whedon, keep me entertained. So he succeeded on that level.
Any other final thoughts?
I'll just say that I understand the movie as a fan base satisfying kind of romp. I don't understand it as a universally acclaimed blockbuster.
And I'm a perfect amalgamation of those two opinions. I had a pass to a Tuesday screening, and you know, most of the time when I get a pass, you know, even for The Gray and Haywire, I was like, all right, I get to see this movie early. I'm really excited about that. And for The Avengers, like, up till that day, I was like, I don't even know if I want to see this early. Like, I'd have to leave work an hour early. I'd have to get off at a completely different subway stop. And it just seemed like more of a hassle than I was willing to do.
Did you see it in 3D?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Any thoughts? Or
I've been keeping from talking about the technical aspects of this film as far as 3D and the digital production went. I saw it on an IMAX screen. Every 15 minutes for the first hour and a half, there would be a kind of buffering moment. If you know what I mean, it's like the frame freezes and the sound that's happening in that frame just kind of repeats itself. It was kind of like, you know, dubstep version. And at some point, the active shutter lenses in the glasses I was using would just stop working. So one of the eye pieces would just go black. But, you know, once I convinced myself that that was...
That sounds so horrible.
Once I convinced myself that that was just, you know, Nick Fury vision, I appreciated it a little, I guess. I mean, I didn't think...
Your eyes literally stop working when you're watching the film. That's what happens.
I mean, it was weird. I pushed past it because I didn't want to blame the film for the downfall of its technology. I didn't think the 3D mattered that much at all. So I guess there's that. That being said, I like the movie. If you haven't seen it yet, you technically don't exist, judging by the box office. But you should see it if you're looking forward to it. If not, it's definitely something that would play just as well on DVD, I feel. I think, Nick, you disagreed with that.
Yeah, I just give this movie money.
Actually, yeah, okay, one last thing. Who did any of you know who that final guy was? There's the mid credits reveal.
There's a good article on Badass Digest about this.
But like before you read that, did you know?
I read it before I saw the movie.
Oh, you son of a bitch! So short.
Because I don't care like about the spoiler.
No, I don't care. I was just like interested.
Oh yeah, no. There's his name is Thanos.
Thanos, he's Mad Titan. Yeah.
He's really bad.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of it. I was like, this is one of those moments I said when people clapped and I was like, oh shit, I don't have any idea what's going on. I thought it was Galactus, the planet-eating dude from
Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer.
I was actually going for Marvel versus Capcom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know him from a video game. That's how poor my knowledge base is. Though in the video game, he's got some pretty good lines, so I guess there's that. Yeah, all right, so moving away from the Avengers, we'll very briefly give our...
Oh, wait.
No, go ahead.
What did... I thought the... Even though I'm, you know, I don't know why I sat through 6 minutes of credits for this, but I did like the last little bit.
Oh, I didn't know that was there, so I didn't see that, but I've heard about it.
It was funny.
It looked like they were having a good meal.
Yeah, the shawarma?
Well, you know how they shot it after the movie premiered?
Yeah.
They literally could have filmed it. Like, the actual process of filming it probably took as long as it was to, you know, I don't know how to form a coherent sentence right now, but it's about 45 seconds long, and it looks like it took 45 seconds to film.
I got you.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's, you know, it's also definitely like it's actually a more like human moment than most of what happens in the film.
Yeah,
where it's a more relatable instance where you're kind of sitting around laughing because, you know,
actually probably would have liked to have that as the actual last scene of the movie. Because it would have given you an idea that they've grown as characters and enjoy each other's company now, and they're an actual team.
Oh, also, one thing about the ending. What was going on with Loki? Like, was Thor going to take him back to Anthony Hopkins to give him a stern talking to? Or
Something like that, I'm sure.
It kind of felt like, you know, if like...
Yeah, because they still didn't kill him.
it's like a kid misbehaves at school, so the mother comes to pick him up, yeah. And is going to take him to the father, and the dad's going to yell at him or something.
No more threatening the planet, Loki. You can't do that.
Yeah. Why didn't they just shoot him or something? Yeah. At this point, he's of no value to you.
Because they need more movies, I guess. And Tom Hiddleston's a good actor.
And I want to see the spinoff movie with Downey Jr. and Ruffalo driving across the country in the convertible.
That would be cute.
I'd rather see that than The Avengers 2, frankly. But
I want to somehow have Captain America go back to World War II. I don't know. I feel like him having to be part of this shared continuity really saps the character of any interest. They didn't go back to his love interest. They kind of just glossed over that. Thor didn't even get his love interest.
The other thing is that this is spoilers, but I think
we
mentioned that we were. With Captain America's trading cards, when Kobe Smulders like comes up to Samuel L. Jackson and she's like, "Oh, those were actually in his locker," and I was just like, "So he went to his locker, got the cards, rubbed them in his blood, put them in his pocket, then gave his speech, and then threw the cards on the table." And it was just,
cards were vintage. Like, he ruined them.
Did you notice how we didn't talk about Agent Coulson dying once?
Oh my God. That is true. All right.
I will admit, I was surprised just because I thought he was going to. I actually read online. Literally right before I left for the theater that he was in talks for Iron Man 3. So it was like, you know, I guess that was a good way to throw off the scent.
I guess. My thing is, I knew he was going to die almost immediately because it's a Joss Whedon movie and that's what he does. I mean, if you've seen Serenity, then you know that like the character that everyone likes that like literally has no real strife in his life is the one that gets offed right before the final scene just to like build up tension.
Oh, okay.
I mean, do we want to say anything more about that? I mean, like, he dies in the most asinine way possible. He gets stabbed through the chest and then has, like, two different death scenes because he has to give speeches to people. It's ridiculous. I didn't think that it really worked for the movie. Like, I know that it worked on, like, a reptilian level, but in a general sense, it was kind of a missed opportunity to do something more.
Now I'm just imagining Samuel Jackson standing over... I'm imagining Samuel Jackson standing over Agent Coulson's dead body, wiping the cards in blood.
It's so weird. I love that image.
Yeah.
God, I really hope it was just like ketchup or something. Like, it's really disturbing to think that he would actually like kind of kneel over and just sort of carefully wipe.
But that's what was going through my head, and it was like really bothering me. Yeah,
Are you going to be okay?
Now that I think about it, that's actually one of the most ridiculous things about the entire movie. Because there's at least some logic to like aliens destroying your...
But there's no logic to wiping playing cards in your friend's blood. Oh my god.
You know how there's actually like 30... There's something like 30 minutes of deleted scenes from the movie. That's what Joss Whedon said.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, Christ. I hope that's a deleted scene on the Blu-ray.
Oh, God. I have no idea if this section is going to make it into the podcast.
No, keep it. Keep it.
No, it's true. I mean, like, when he did that, I was like, okay, so they're definitely setting up Nick Fury as the next bad guy, right?
No, they're setting him up as a sociopath.
They've got, like, yeah, it's got to be something like that. Because his actions in this movie are fucking reprehensible. And it's really insane that, like, they're still trying to portray him as a good guy. You know, his friend is dying and he, like, takes the time to break into his locker and take his most prized possession and wipe it in his blood.
You had to do it quickly, too.
Yeah, because those people were there. They were, like, moving the body soon. And then he's also making weapons. He's an arms dealer. It's weird. I don't understand.
Yeah.
He's just not a good leader either. I don't know. That, again, we could spend more time than this movie spends being a movie talking about the various shortcomings of it. And yet somehow we'd still come out on the other side saying it's a decent movie.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, kind of gives you an idea of how decent it is and how great it could have been but never achieved.
Yeah, I would still give it a B.
Oh, I think I gave it a B- in my head. I did give it a wait for DVD on whatever the rating system on the other side of Rate 4 is. But I mean, I don't know.
This is going to get them going.
Remember, you can email us podcast@thefilmstage.com. You can also just comment at the film stage where we will post this episode. Okay, so now that we've completely eviscerated this movie while saying how much we like it, we can go into our picks for the week ahead. We got a couple of films coming out to theaters and DVD, the highest profile of which is Dark Shadows, the new film by Tim Burton starring Johnny Depp, Michelle Pfeiffer, Helena Bonham Carter. God Bless America will be entering limited release. You may recall we had some thoughts on that. Hick will be going into limited release, starring Chloe Grace Moretz and Blake Lively. And then we have some DVD picks. None of them are spectacular. Does anyone have a best bet for next week?
Oh, man. Wow. I mean, Gremlins 2 is coming out on Blu-ray.
Oh, well.
I've heard Lahane is good. It's coming out on Criterion Blu-ray.
I haven't seen Lahane, but yeah, it's supposed to be amazing.
Lahane is supposed to be great, actually.
This is 1 week late. I had no idea this was coming out the last time we recorded, but Martin Scorsese's documentary, George Harrison, Living in the Material World, came out on Blu-ray. I guess by the time this is recorded, it'll have been, by the time this is released, it'll have been 1 week, but seek that out because it's fantastic.
I'm going to say that you should stay home and think of something better to do. If Hick is coming to your town, I am interested in seeing that. I haven't heard anything about it.
I've heard it's bad.
Oh, seeing the trailer, I was interested, but that's the same mistake I made with God Bless America, which was enjoyable in a way, but not that great. So yeah, I guess I don't really have any looking forward. I know we're going to be talking about Dark Shadows next week. We can all look forward to that, right?
Oh,
guys.
No. I had been avoiding the Frankenweenie trailer. But I saw it in front of, for some reason, it was the last trailer that played before the
movie started. Yeah, it played before mine also.
I don't know why Dark Knight Rises was first and Frankenweenie last, but.
Probably because no one would have wanted to sit through the Avengers after watching the Dark Knight Rises trailer.
Maybe. Yeah. No, I'm not looking forward to Dark Shadows at all. I don't like Tim Burton in the slightest. I think he's a hack.
Yeah, agree. We will try to bring you our completely unbiased, objective opinions on Dark Shadows next week when you rejoin us for the Film Stage show. Before we sign off, Danny, Nick, why don't you tell us where we can find more of your work online?
I have a personal site, thekingbulletin.com, and you can also find me on Twitter at twitter.com/thekingbulletin.
You can find all my writing at thefilmstage.com. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Nick_Newman.
And I, of course, maintain my personal blog, dearfilm.net, and you can find me online at twitter.com/BrianJRowan. That's Brian with an I. God help you if you're looking for it with a Y. You won't find me. But yes, we will see you next week when we review Tim Burton's latest cultural masterpiece, Dark Shadows.